Support for this podcast comes from ESIX. ESIX advances corporate executive recruiting by providing its 90-plus members with proprietary research, tools, training, and the networking they need for a competitive advantage. Members include the likes of BT Group, Philips, Booking.com, Mondelez, American Express, and Walmart. You can find out more at e6.org, and E6 is spelt E-S-I-X. E6's new book, Leadership Recruiting, Strategies, Tactics, and Tools for Hiring Organizations, releases on Amazon in December. The book not only shows how great companies recruit great leaders, it reveals the history and best practices of this vital and sometimes secretive function. To get your copy, send your questions on corporate executive recruiting to simon@e6.org and say Matt Alder sent you. The best questions will receive a free copy.
There's been more of scientific discovery, more of technical advancement and material progress in your lifetime and mine than in all the ages of history.
Hi everyone, this is Matt Alder. Welcome to episode 284 of the Recruiting Future podcast. Since the start of the pandemic, unemployment has risen all over the world at an unprecedented rate. Even if the labour market does bounce back quickly, things are likely to look very different, with many industries currently going through an accelerated digital transformation. So what can be done to address the increasingly urgent issue of employability? How should employers be thinking about talent? And are there any lessons that we can learn from previous economic crises? My guest this week is Colin Donnery, Director of Turas Nua, Ireland's leading provider of employability services, which has helped over 40,000 people back into the workforce in the last 4 years. Hi, Colin, and welcome to the podcast.
Great to talk to you, Matt. Hope you're well.
Absolutely, and an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. Could you just introduce yourself and tell everyone what you do?
I've been working in recruitment, employability and training for over 20 years now. The last 17 of those have been for a cooperative social enterprise called FRS in Ireland, set up in 1980. And so this is our 40-year anniversary, a strange year for it, but still we're celebrating nonetheless. FRS is originally set up to, I suppose, support the agriculture sector and workers within it. And since then, we've diversified into a number of mainstream recruitment, training, and employability sectors. We've also a tech business. We've grown to 70 offices, and we have over 2,000 employees now in Ireland.
Tell us a little bit more about the employability aspect of what you do.
Yeah, so in following the financial crash of 2008, it had a profound impact on the Irish economy, which as a result of it caused our housing bubble to collapse, which initially, I suppose, on the economic side, resulted in house prices falling by over 60%, and then unemployment peaking at 17%. We had mass emigration, and it was, I suppose, a horrendous time for Ireland. We had the IMF arrived and basically ran our country for over 2 years, which wasn't as bad actually as it sounds. They made things happen really on the ground and fixed things from a banking perspective, and helped us, I suppose, get back on the road to recovery. So in 2011, we were working in around the employability area, not through our training business, doing sort of training courses to upskill people and retrain them. And we set up a company called Turas Nua, which basically means new journey. in Celtic, and in 2014 we responded to the to the unemployment crisis by setting up that business. So we opened 40 offices, hired in just 350 people over 18 months to help the long-term unemployed back into jobs as part of a program that the government set up called Job Path, which is basically the largest ever employability program in Ireland.
I obviously want to kind of bring this conversation right up to date and talk about what's happening now and what's happening all over the world. But talk through a little bit more in terms of the details, in terms of sort of tools and techniques that you use to help get people back to work.
Sure. So initially when we looked at the employability sector, I suppose we looked at the UK. We partnered with a UK charity called Working Links. Initially, we set up a joint venture, and I suppose we had the on-the-ground recruitment experience in Ireland and training and that, and they had some, expertise in the whole sort of helping, you know, unemployed people back into work. So with them, the first thing we did was we understood we would need to assess people and understand their distance from the labour market. So we created a what's called a distance travel tool. So it's a piece of assessment technology which looks at the individual customer, individual unemployed person, and looks at their distance from the labour market across a lot of different areas like skills, confidence, health, mental health, drugs and alcohol, housing issues, childcare issues, and transport. And basically, when each customer comes in, they take this assessment, and it shows their distance from the labour market on a score of 1 to 10, and it also shows their, I suppose, adaptability and the types of jobs that they could be eventually moved to or retrained for. So we've had over 110,000 people come onto the program. So we keep them for a year on program and help them back into employment. To date, we've helped almost 40,000 people into real jobs, into full and mostly full-time jobs and a few part-time sort of positions. So this assessment really drives, I suppose, the whole way we work with the individual. And it is really an individual assessment. And we've seen, I suppose, to date, we reassess people after 13 weeks, 26 weeks, 39 weeks, and when they leave us at 52 weeks if they haven't found a job. And we're able to see regional trends, I suppose, across the country, sectoral trends, you know, challenges around childcare in particular regions where drugs is more, has a part to play, or alcohol. And we're able to obviously give that information at a macro level to inform policy. So that really drives, I suppose, the initial interaction with the customer. And I suppose one of the key things with you know, when someone's unemployed, I think people tend to forget this, the longer they go unemployed, even if they're really good at the job they did, and, you know, confidence tends to wane, particularly, and depression and mental health gets affected. So we see through our programs that just by interacting with the people in that initial stage, that their mental health starts to improve, and we really work on their confidence. So we do that in a one-to-one basis. So we have frontline personal advisors that work with the customers, and I suppose just talk them through, you know, what getting back into work is like, where to the types of roles they could focus on, and help them to do that. I suppose one of the things we learned quite early on was initially we were looking at what we would call in the recruitment agency sector a 360 model for this, but we found, I suppose, that it was a really big challenge for an advisor to deal with a customer's challenges while also trying to find them jobs. So basically what we did was we created what we call our employer services team, which sits on top of the business. So goes out to employers, brings in jobs, and basically supports the individuals in the recruitment process. So I suppose that's the advocacy piece, which the employer services team do. The personal advisors do the whole guidance piece, and we work with over 12,000 employers in Ireland, from the largest multinational through to small and medium-sized business. But I suppose what we see is there's different challenges with different people, and you need basically a tailored journey for each of these individuals. I think we see, I suppose, the impact that has in improving confidence, then working on skills, which we do. We've a tutor team, which is in the business, I suppose, over 30 tutors, which we've built over 60 individual courses, which help around skills and confidence. And then routeways, which we build for certain sectors of the economy, like construction, healthcare, retail, customer service, IT. So effectively what we're doing is we're taking information from the labor market, from employers, and building, I suppose, the service we deliver for those individual unemployed customers to help them back into work.
Coming right up to the current situation, 2020, We find ourselves in a position that no one could have predicted. Unemployment in many, many countries around the world is going back up to the level that you've described very, very quickly. Obviously, you're kind of right at the front line in terms of what's happening here. What are you seeing? How is this different from before? What's going on out there at the moment?
Okay, so I think we've never seen really anything in our lifetimes like COVID-19, and I suppose either really has the labor market. It's initially, when we looked at it, we sort of looked back to the I suppose September 11th in 2001, when the economy took a real hit really quickly at that point, and it had a huge impact on obviously world economies and world labor markets. But that was a shortish sort of 6 month to 8 month hiatus, and the economies bounced back really, really quickly. This is definitely different, right? So, and I suppose that's, I'm stating the obvious. In Ireland, so just to take the Irish economy, so we had reached basically zero unemployment, technical zero unemployment, about 4.5% in February this year. Now, what we're seeing is youth unemployment has risen to 50%. Unemployment, and we're technically in, I suppose, around the sort of 35% unemployment rate. The OECD and the Irish government, and I suppose various commentators, are saying that best case scenario you're looking at probably around 12.5% unemployment, mid range about 16%, and a bad forecast is about 20%. So, and I'm just looking at the UK numbers, it's a pretty similar scenario in the UK and the US. I suppose the difference this time compared to Ireland, like I think the world probably has a lot to learn from Ireland's response to the last crash, in that the key thing, and I think governments are doing it this time, is putting the infrastructure and financial supports in place to support workers and businesses to hire workers. So I think initially that's a good thing, but the sectors been affected are a lot different to the last time. You know, so retail and hospitality particularly have obviously been decimated, and I've heard the reports of the UK sort of losing a lot of retail jobs, and it's the same in Ireland. And that's a dual thing going on. So obviously the COVID has caused this, COVID-19, but also I think the move to, I suppose, digital, you know, the Amazons of this world and online purchasing, and has really exacerbated this. And it is debatable whether, I suppose, those jobs will return. I think we can be probably sure they won't return in the same numbers, but it's really, you know, how deep those job losses will be, and what will return. Hospitality has obviously been, dramatically affected, and I think the numbers suggest it mightn't be as badly affected as we come back out into normality. But I think one of the areas that people miss is that these sectors, particularly retail and hospitality, have always. I know, even for me, I started off working in a pub many years ago, and before I got into my current career, and it helped me through college, and as it does for a lot of people. So they create their stepping stone jobs in retail and hospitality, and they, if they're not there for students and people who are getting on the first rung of the ladder, it causes a huge challenge, particularly for those youth unemployment numbers. And you know, across Europe, we see it in countries like Spain, Portugal, have had stubbornly high youth unemployment and lack of engagement from, I suppose, 18 to 24-year-olds in the labour market.
You said that there's obviously different industries being affected this time round, and it's a strange situation because there are industries that have literally just stopped overnight. As you say, some of this is speeding up a digital transformation that was already potentially happening. There are also other industries that are still looking to recruit and want to sort of bring great talent and great potential talent into their businesses. How do employers in those industries, how do they need to change their thinking to access some of these talent pools that are out there that might be traditionally people with backgrounds that they wouldn't have considered employing before?
Traditionally, in the 80s and 90s and into the early 2000s, most organizations looked at people's CVs and really where they had worked previously. And I suppose the great companies we work with in Ireland look beyond, I suppose, those previous experience and look at the inherent sort of, I suppose, skills that these unemployed individuals have. And and it comes back to the sort of digitizing of advocacy and guidance, which is what we do. And we've been looking at this for a number of years now. And it's actually really challenging for us to, I suppose, digitize that service. But I suppose we're starting to use things like chatbots to, I suppose, make the experience better for our customers. But I think when we look at a company that comes to us, we usually what will happen is if we'll take a call center job, company has a call center job. There's three people who would apply for it. You know, you've got a person who's in a call center job has applied for it. Obviously, they're the favorite to get the job. You've got the unemployed person who's maybe just been made unemployed from through COVID-19, worked in retail, and you might have a long term unemployed person who is unemployed maybe 7 or 8 years. The challenge for the latter two is that as we see, like one of the issues for employers and for those job seekers is that, and we're seeing it already, is job applications have multiplied dramatically in the last couple of months. So employers are starting to put in place technology screening technology to, I suppose, try and find the best person for a job, and it effectively rules out anyone who doesn't have exactly on what it says on the tin in terms of skills and experience. So I suppose what we try to do is obviously advocate for that individual, get talking to the employer and I suppose tap into their HR processes and their hiring processes to allow that to happen. So I think the really great employers look further than the CV. And I know you've talked about that in previous shows, how we still seem to be stuck on this sort of basic, if it's not on the CV, it sort of, the CV goes in the bin. So I think our opinion is that the really great employers move beyond that and look at what this person can bring. And I think from diversity and lots of different areas of bringing, I suppose, different thinking into an organization and different skills. Like what we find with unemployed people is that really engaged and looking to get back into work, they're hungry for work and I suppose hungry to make a a difference, really, both initially to their lives, but when they're given an opportunity, you get, I think, an exponential return on investment from that and that person coming into your organization.
One of the things that also comes out from all of this is there's the huge amount of publicity about large organizations having big layoffs. So in the UK, the week that we're recording this, Boots and John Lewis have been in the news for laying people off. But actually, in many countries, it's the smaller sort of medium-sized businesses that actually sort of make up the bulk of the economy, and no one really sort of talks about redundancies and closures and the effects that has on the labor market. What are you seeing from that perspective?
Yeah, so in Ireland, as in most countries, small and medium-sized employers make up about 60 to 65% of the labor market in terms of headcount, and we these types of organizations have been decimated, really. They tend not to have big cash pools or big balance sheets in order for them to ride out this type of economy and catastrophic drop in business. So what we've seen is, and I suppose we've got this sort of false economy, I would call it, going on at the moment. In the UK, you call it furlough. So you have many people still, I suppose, technically employed by their employers. The UK is different to Ireland in that, I suppose, the workers don't work in the UK when they're furloughed, basically, but in Ireland, actually, they are still working and attached to the employer. And I think it'll be interesting to see how that one plays out, which system works better. It seems to be working really well in Ireland so far, in that we have, I suppose, 600,000 people still attached to their businesses and still working away. So, as I say, it's a bit of an experiment. It also brings in the whole sort of UBI, Universal Basic Income type of argument. We almost have an experiment really at play at the moment. And I suppose the challenges around that from a, I suppose, societal perspective is, and the naysayers on UBI would say, well, you know, it's a disincentive to work. So when we start to come out of this, it'll be interesting, I think, to see how that plays out. But on your question on small and medium-sized business, I think there's absolutely no doubt that they have been massively affected. We've seen large multinationals in Ireland. We have, I think, more or less 48 of the top 50 companies in the world who are headquartered in Ireland. And the bulk of them are doing fairly okay. Like, some of them have actually grown dramatically during the crisis. And I think it leads to a sort of a societal question, really, around, you know, the whole social contract and you know, as a society is made up of workers, employers, you know, and government and stakeholders, and you know, this whole area of I suppose what's been created in the last 10 years of the gig economy really comes into question, you know, where workers really don't have a social welfare parachute to protect them during periods like this. Most people have been protected at the moment, but as we come out of this, typically what happens, a lot of people get left behind, and I suppose they're the people that will need to be supported. The gig economy effectively doesn't provide, I suppose, the tax numbers to states around the world and in any country to provide the social welfare benefits that people require. Now, obviously, that's a regional thing, and different countries work, I suppose, operate in different ways. Like, the US is obviously different to Ireland and the UK, but I think it's going to become a really big question for us as a society and how we protect workers, you know, going forward.
Final question. Obviously, governments all over the world are now addressing the issue of how they get people back to work, how they get jobs growing in their economies again. What would your advice be to policymakers in terms of what they have to put into place to get people and their skills ready to get back to work in the new economy that we find ourselves in?
That's a big question, Matt, but I suppose the The first thing, obviously, is to, I think, continue the supporting, first of all, organizations to allow them to keep people in jobs as long as possible. We which I think is a good thing, we seem to have moved from the austerity to more of an investment type strategy in supporting businesses and workers. So I think that's the first bit. I think, secondly, we certainly have challenges around youth unemployment, and, you know, areas like, I suppose, single parents and the drugs and alcohol. So this whole area is sort of embedded and has a lot of different inputs and drivers in terms of what affects it. The education system, I think, needs to change dramatically as we move to much more gig economy style work and, you know, consultants and contractors. You know, we don't really teach our kids as they come through school and college how to operate in that type of in that type of market. So I think we need to look at education. We need to look at the individual, and I suppose give the individual supports. Governments tend to like dealing with things in cohorts, right? So it's like we'll put a lot of money into a particular cohort, and that will support that. But I think we've got to continue to look at the individual, provide, I suppose, the funding to support employers to hire these people. And the Irish government did a lot of this. Organizations were incentivized to look a bit differently at the people that were coming in the door. And, if they were unemployed, they were incentivized to hire them. And we did that. We had a successful internship scheme in Ireland in 2013, 14, 15. There's talk about, I suppose, companies being allowed to, you know, use the, like an extended furlough scheme to hire people. And I think that would be a really good thing. Also, they've got to look forward. I don't think governments really are looking forward at things like, you know, artificial intelligence, robotics, machine learning, and how that is impacting jobs. I think there's a really good professor in MIT called David Autor, who's the really, I would look up to at for guidance on this. And, you know, AI is really, in terms of job displacement, is evolutionary rather than revolutionary, right? So we see jobs being displaced right across the world and right across sectors, like call centers, chatbots are replacing jobs. And it does, like, right through our economy and our history and, you know, over the last 100 years, jobs have been displaced and replaced by automation and technology, not necessarily overnight, but these things are definitely happening. So two things need to happen, I think, from that perspective is, one, looking at the retraining and skills of people and the education of people to, I suppose, develop as workers and as citizens and as individuals. And then, on the other side is looking at how we support those people to continue to grow in the economies around the world.
Colin, thank you very much for talking to me.
Thank you, Matt. Great to talk to you.
My thanks to Colin Donnery. You can subscribe to this podcast in Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, or via your podcasting app of choice. Please also follow us on Instagram. You can find the show by searching for Recruiting Future. You can search through all the past episodes at www.recruitingfuture.com. On that site, you can also subscribe to the mailing list to get the inside track about everything that's coming up on the show. Thanks very much for listening. I'll be back next time, and I hope you'll join me.
This is my show.
Do you love news about LinkedIn, Indeed, Google, and just about every other recruitment tech company out there?
Hell yeah. I'm Chad.
I'm Cheese.
We're the Chad and Cheese Podcast.
All the latest recruiting news and insights are on our show.
Dripping in snark and attitude.
Subscribe today wherever you listen to your podcasts.
We out.